Instead of coming to you this morning as a missionary from Nigeria, I would like to come to you as a member of the Nigerian WMU. And as I come, dressed not like a missionary, but like a member of the Nigerian WMU, I would like to bring you greetings from Nigeria also. For as I left Nigeria, everyone whom I saw when I was leaving said these words to me: "When you get to America, please salute all of the Baptist Christians that you see and do not leave out anyone." So today, from the Christians of Nigeria, I would salute each of you and not leave out anyone. Since we are meeting in a music hall today and have as our theme the words from a Hebrew song, I thought it only fitting that I bring to you a musical instrument from Africa. This is a violin, and it's the most valuable violin that you will ever see. Now, I don't mean that it costs a lot of money, because it's made out of a board and a piece of cow horn and a stick and a snake skin and the hair from the tail of a living white horse. But it is a valuable violin just the same. For this violin makes music for people to dance by. But more than that, those who know how to play this violin can so reproduce the tone of human speech on this violin that when it plays, you can actually hear it talk and can hear the words that it says. And so to a people who have had no written language, this violin has served to preserve the legends of history from time immemorial up until the present time. But even that would not make it the most valuable violin that you ever saw. The reason that this is the most valuable violin that you ever saw is that this violin is a god. This violin is the god of the dead. And I would like to tell you today about someone who worships this god. I presume that most of you who are here today are mothers. And I want you to remember back to the time when your first baby was born. And I want you to remember the words that you said, the first words that you said after that baby was born. I know what they were. I think I can say for every one of you exactly what the first sentence was that you said after that baby was born. For my mother told me, and I found out that my mother usually always told me the truth, that the first thing a mother always says after a baby is born is my baby all right? I see some of you nod your heads, and I know you remember asking that sentence too, and you remember how excited you were as you waited for the answer that was to come. You know, women are the same the world over. And in Africa, when a baby is born, the mother asks the same thing first of all: is my baby all right? But in one part of Nigeria where I live, when a woman asks that question, she gets an answer sometimes that none of you has ever received. For sometimes when a woman of this tribe says, "Is my baby all right?" that one who is with her says to her, "No, this child isn't a baby, it's a witch." How would you feel if someone said that to you about a baby for which you had prepared and longed for a long time? But sometimes witches do come to the world in the form of babies, and it's a terrifying thing to the family when they come. Sometimes you can't tell immediately, but sometimes even at birth, they let themselves be known. Because if the baby comes feet first, or it comes with its face down, the people know it's a witch. Real people aren't born that way. But sometimes, not even then, can you tell that it's a witch, because the witch is very wise and does not let itself be known. And it's only when the baby has grown and you have come to love it as your own child, and it has gotten to be 7 months old and has its first tooth, and then you know it's a witch, because real people have their first teeth when they're 6 months old or 8 months old. Only witches have teeth when they're 7 months old. Or maybe the top tooth comes in first instead of the bottom tooth, and certainly that's a witch, because real people always have their bottom teeth first. But maybe not even those things show you that the child is a witch. Maybe you have it and love it for a long time, and someone in your family becomes very ill. Let's say it's your mother, an old lady who lives with you. and you go to the local medicine man, because in this tribe, the Abarba tribe, there are no hospitals. There's nobody else to go to when you get sick. And you go to him and you say, my mother is very sick. Can't you give me some medicine to make my mother well? And he says, yes, I have just what you need. You bring me all your money, and I'll give you the medicine. So you gather all your money, and you take it to him, and he gives you medicine to make your mother well, and you give it all to her, and she doesn't get well. She gets worse. And you go back, and you say, my mother is still ill. Can't you give me some medicine, some more powerful medicine that will make her well? And he says, why, yes, I have something else. Bring me all your money. And you say, but I've given you all my money. And he says, well, you go home and get your good clothes. Bring your good clothes, and we'll see if that's not enough. So you bring your good clothes to him, and he gives you the medicine, and you take it home and give it to your mother, but she doesn't get well. She gets worse. And you come back and say, isn't there some other medicine you can give my mother? And he looks at you and he says, I've given you all the medicine that I have. There's something else that's making your mother sick. Is there a baby in your house? And you say, why, yes, I have a little girl, 5 months old, or a little boy, 6 months old. And he says, I knew there was something that kept my medicine from working. That child in your home is not a baby at all. It's a witch. And unless you get rid of that child, your mother is going to die. What would you do if you were that mother and you loved your baby and you loved your mother too? 2 years ago this month, a baby that was a witch was born in Okuta. They knew she was a witch. She was born feet first and face down, not just one, but two signs. And she was the first child of the parents. Even though that she was a girl, they loved her, but they were terrified by the fact that she was a witch. And so they went to the local Muslim priest in the town to seek religious guidance from him. And he took the Quran, the holy book of the Muslims, and he took a piece of paper and he copied some Arabic words from the Quran on the piece of paper, and he folded it up so it was about the size of your thumbnail. And he took a string and he wrapped around it, and he took another string and he made a chain, and he took some leaves and he pounded them up and made some red ink, and he dropped all of this chain and into this red ink made from the leaves, and he gave it to the father, and he said, you take this and tie it around your baby's neck, and it will protect you from this baby that's a witch. And so the father tied the Quran around the baby's neck and he took it home. But things kept on happening in the family, things that were accidents, and they were worried, and they went back to the priest. And so he took a piece of leather and he made a chain, and he took a brass ring and he put it on it, and he said to the father, wear this around your neck. This will protect you from this baby that's a witch. But things kept on happening, and finally the people in the village said, this child is a witch and you've got to do something about it. Now, there are two things the Abarba people can do with these babies that are witches that are born. The first thing they can do is they can destroy it, like you'd destroy a little cat that you didn't want. Of course, that's against the law, but you know, even in this country, you can destroy unwanted babies and nobody can find out about it. But these parents loved this baby and they didn't want to kill it, even though they were afraid of it and it was a witch. And there was one other thing that they can do. Near the Abarba people in Nigeria in the north, there lives a tribe of people who are the cowboys of Nigeria. They're the Fulanis, and they travel around everywhere. And they have made themselves a friend of the Abarbas, so that when one of these witch children is born, if the Abarba parent will take the baby and put it on a mat behind the little straw hut where the nomadic cowboys live at sunset, when they come in from taking care of their cattle, they will find the baby there and they will know it's one of the witch children. Now, they're afraid of it too because they fear witches, but they know that the cattle that they have are very wise about spiritual things, and they can help them to know how powerful this witch child is. So they go out behind their house in kind of a lot where the cattle are collected together at night. And they take the mat and the baby and put it there in the middle of the lot where these cattle are. And these cattle are like Brahma cattle here in Texas, with humps on their backs and long horns. And they say during the night, if this is really a dangerous witch that will harm them, the cattle will hook it or step on it or hurt it in some way, and then they will know that they cannot bring it into their home. But if the cattle don't hurt it, then it's all right to take it into their home. And so they have milk from the cattle, and they feed the babies, and sometimes the babies live and sometimes they don't, because, well, they may be a day old or 6 months old or a year old when they come. But they try to get them to live and to make them grow up to be strong until they're about 3 years old, big enough to walk around and to work. And then they make slaves out of them. Now, I've heard students that I've taught in school say that when you are near the Sahara Desert, you see these little children working all day long in the hot weather, in the rain, in the sandstorms. It doesn't matter how hot the sun is shining. They work all day long because they're little slave children. And when they grow up, if their master is kind, they can buy their freedom from their master by saving some way and getting a cow and a sheep and paying him this cow and the sheep. And then they can go to live in a village, a small village, where nobody but witches live. Nobody but people who have been said witches. And when they go, their master gives them a violin like this. And he says, you take this to the village with you and worship it. This is your God. It's the God of the dead. And there in those villages, a little slave boy marries a slave girl, and they have children, and their children are divided. Half go to the master of the wife, and half go to the master of the husband, and so they remain slaves forever. But when something very bad happened in this home, the mother said to the father, what are we going to do with our baby? And he said, well, I can't kill the child. And the mother said, well, I can't stand the idea of my baby being a slave forever, and her children being a slave forever. But the old people put pressure on them, and they didn't know anything else that they could do. And finally, the pressure was so great that they knew they were going to have to get rid of the baby in some way. And they lay awake thinking all one night, and finally they remembered that just recently there had come to live in their midst some white people, some Baptist missionaries, although they didn't know that. But they were afraid of those white people because they had such pale skins, they looked like corpses, and they had such big noses, they wondered how they could drink out of a glass. And they were such peculiar-looking people that they were afraid to go to them. But living with those white people was a Yoruba girl, a midwife, and she had come to work in a little dispensary that was open. It was the first medical help that this tribe of people that has more than 40 villages in it had ever had, because they had never had any medical help before, never any missionaries before. And the father and the mother talked about taking the child of these white people whom they thought were powerful, but they were afraid to go to them. They didn't know them, and they looked so strange. And so finally the mother said, let's take it to the African girl who works with them. We know that she might be afraid of the baby, but she's a friend of the white people, and maybe they'll give her the courage to keep our baby. And so the mother and the father got themselves dressed, and they went to the dispensary. When they got there, Pogun was working, as she always was, with sick babies. And when they brought in this baby, she thought it was a sick baby too. And she looked at it and asked the mother what was wrong with it. And the mother said, oh, something terrible is wrong with our baby. And she looked at it, and it was fat, and it was laughing, and it was healthy. It was 6 months and 20 days old. And she thought, nothing could be wrong with this child. And she got out vitamin pills to give the mother so she'd feel good when she went away. And the mother said, oh, I don't want your medicine. She said, I've come to give you my baby. And Pokun said, give me the baby. And the mother said, yes, this baby is a witch. Now, she said, we know you're frightened of it, and we know she can do terrible things to you. We've got this charm that we've put around her neck. We've got this charm around our necks, but it doesn't seem to do any good. And the people in the town say we must get rid of her, and we can't stand to think of killing her or making her a slave. And so we brought her. We want to give her to you. We thought maybe if you would go and beg these powerful people, these white people who are your friends, we think they have some powerful magic they could give you that you could use that could keep our baby from hurting you, and you could care for her for us. And Pogun said to the mother, but I don't have a husband. I'm not married. And the mother said, but what am I going to do with my baby? And so Pogun said, all right, I'll take your baby on one condition. You come back every month and see how the baby's getting along. So the mother said, all right. Pogun kept on working all that day, and after she got through working, she walked about 2 blocks down the street to where the young man to whom she was engaged to marry in 2 months was working. He was a student from the school where I have taught in Nigeria, and he requested not to teach in one of our high schools when he finished our school, but to go to this area because their language had never been written down. They didn't even have a school. And he said, I want to beg them to let me start a school, and I want to write the language, and I want to translate the Bible into the language so that people can know of Jesus. And so he was there begging the king to let him start a school and helping the missionaries to learn the language while he was there. And she walked down to the house where he was and opened the door and went in, and she said to him, and remember, they were to be married in 2 months, look what we have. We have a baby. And so he asked how she got it, and she told him. And he said, all right. He said, I'm not teaching school now. I'm teaching the missionaries and preaching and other things. So let me take care of the baby all day long. But at night, I might sleep and not hear her cry. So you take care of her at night, and that way she'll be our baby even before we're married. And so that's what they did. They got married in December a year ago. They called this baby Grace because they said God's grace had saved her and brought them to her. And then they gave her another name, which means God gave her to us to pet or to make a spoiled child out of. Every month or so, the mother would come back, and just before I left Nigeria, this young man came to see me and brought this violin and the charm that came from the little girl's neck when they got her. And he said, just this past month, her mother came, and for the first time, we got her to hold Grace. And of course, every time the mother comes, they talk to her about Jesus and how he loved all the little children. I said, did the mother pick her up? And he said, oh, no, she wouldn't pick her up, but she sat down in a chair. And we picked Grace up and sat her on the mother's lap. And he said, all the time she was holding her, her hands were out at her sides, trembling like this, fearful of what this powerful witch could do to her. Why did that mother give her baby away? Why did she think she was a witch? Was it because the mother didn't love the child? Oh, she loved her. There were many things she could not have done if she loved her. Was it because she was black and black people just don't know any better? No, it didn't have anything to do with color. The mother gave that child away for only one reason. Nobody ever said to that mother or that father, God is love. Just before I came from Nigeria the last time, I wanted to take some pictures. And after I got here, I showed some of the pictures. And so when I got back this time, a lady in Houston called me and said, I want you to show the pictures that you had when you were here before to my church. And I said to her, I'm sorry. I said, if you'll invite me to speak to your church and then ask me to come back a second time, I'll show the pictures then. And she said, no, I want them to see the pictures. She said, I've heard you speak, and that's all right, but I want them to see the pictures. And I said, I'm sorry, but I've made a rule, and I'm never going to show my pictures unless I've talked first. Because I said so many people in America are so prejudiced against African people that when they see pictures of colored people on a screen, they're funny. It's not anything funny about the people, but it's just funny. And so they laugh. And I said, I feel like I'm insulting the people with whom I work and the Lord's house when people laugh about serious matters. And so I'm not going to show them until I talk first. Because if I talk first and go back, I know they'll receive them all right for the next time. And she said, but I want them to see the picture. There's one picture there that I want the women to see because this picture has been a great blessing to me for the past 3 years. I wondered what picture it was. You know, people get us missionaries mixed up, and I could imagine some picture from China or something that she was remembering. And I said to her, what picture is it that you've remembered for 3 years? And she said to me, it's a picture of a leper woman. And then I knew the picture she meant. Just before I came back, I took that picture. I didn't have a picture of a leper before this time, and I wanted to get a picture of a leper, and I wanted one that had leprosy real bad before they came from treatment, so they were deformed in some way. But I couldn't get the courage to go out and ask a leper in our leper settlement right outside the town where I live to let me take their picture. You know, there's something not quite nice about asking a deformed person to let you take a picture of their deformity so people can look at it and make faces. And I talked to one of the missionaries there who went out to the leper colony often. It was Edith Montroy. She's here now. And she said to me, I know some of them very well, and they don't mind. They know why you want to take the pictures. And I'll go with you, and I'll ask someone, if you want me to let you take the picture. And so we went together. We got out to the place, and the first person that we saw was Deborah. Deborah usually came out to the car first. Deborah had been there a long time, and before she came, she'd had leprosy a long time because after her parents found that she had it, they hid her away for a long time, not wanting the shame of a leper in the family to be known. And so Deborah was very deformed. Her hands looked just about like this, for in leprosy, your fingers get shorter until they're finally absorbed into your hands, and so she only had about this much fingers left. And on her right hand, she didn't have a thumb at all because one night when it was cold, she had built a fire out at the leper colony in her hut and gone to sleep. And during the night, she waked up when she smelled something cooking and picked up her hand and saw that her thumb had burned away in the fire while she slept. You know, leprosy kills the feeling in the affected part. And so Edith said to her, Miss Rome wants to take your picture. And Deborah said, all right, where do you want me to stand? And we showed her, and she stood with her hands like this while I took her picture. And after I took it, I realized that she had a big smile on her face. That's very unusual. Most Africans don't like to smile in pictures. They think the pictures don't look very dignified, and so they usually are rather solemn when you take their picture. And I said, Deborah, you're smiling very big today. I said, you must be very happy. And she looked at me, and she said, why, I always smile. I said, you always smile? Why do you always smile? And she said, well, I have been at this place for a long time. We figured out later that she'd been there for about 10 years at this time. She said, I have been at this place for a long time. And she said, you know, when I had been here less than a week, one of the other lepers came to me and said, every Sunday morning, a college student comes and preaches in the chapel here, and we'd like for you to go to the service today. And she said, I had years of boring inactivity in this place ahead of me. I had nothing to do, and so I went because I didn't have any place else to go. And when I went, she said, I heard that student speak of Jesus. And it was the first time I had ever heard of Jesus in my life. And she said, I kept on going back, and after about a year, I gave my heart to Christ. And 6 months later, they allowed me to be baptized, and I became a member of the Leper Colony Baptist Church. And she said, ever since that day, I have always smiled, for I say to the Lord, if you had not given me leprosy, I could never have known you. And this woman in Houston said, I want the women in my church to see that picture, because during these past 3 years, there's been a lot of sickness and death in my family, and sometimes my heart has been overburdened with care. And whenever I have been most disheartened, I have remembered that leper woman's smiling face. And I have said to myself, but what are the cares and the troubles of this world compared to the fact that I know Jesus and am known by him? Assemble yourselves and come. Draw near together, ye that are escaped of the nations. They have no knowledge that set up the wood of their graven image and pray unto a God that cannot save. Tell ye and bring them near. Yea, let them take counsel together. Who hath declared this from ancient time? Who hath told it from that time? Have not I the Lord? And there is no God else beside me, a just God and a Savior. There is none beside me. Look unto me, and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth. For I am God, and there is none else. For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him of whom they've not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent?